Well, have you all had your fill of anticipation, counsel, to be the last case this morning? Blue Valley Hospital, 183117. Mr. Tiedemann. Did I get it right?
You did get it right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'm Kurt Tiedemann. I represent Blue Valley Hospital. With me at counsel table is my partner, Andrew Rickey. Also with me in the gallery today is another partner of mine, Randy Schultz, and next to him is the CEO of Blue Valley Hospital, Mr. Todd Wells.
Welcome, all of you.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal with your permission, and I hope to be able to use it, but if I eat into it a little bit, I'll use whatever's left. This case comes to you for de novo review based on a dismissal for a lack of subject matter jurisdiction under Rule 12b-6. The underlying action is one for an injunction in which Blue Valley Hospital sought to enjoin CMS from terminating its Medicare provider contract without due process. Because the continued participation under that agreement is a property right, the due process clause of the Constitution requires a pre-termination hearing, pre-termination, before that right can be terminated.
Let me ask you what the status is of your administrative proceedings. Are they?
They're filed, and we're waiting.
You mean they're final?
I'm sorry?
Do you say they're final?
Yes.
So you had a hearing before the administrative agency?
We have not had a hearing, no. We filed it, and it's in the loop.
Okay, but nothing's happened in that administrative
There have been exchanges of paper, planning.
Say filed or final?
Yeah. Filed, F-I-L-E-D. Oh, we filed it.
It sounds like final to me.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not the same thing.
No, it has been filed. I believe we are set for, currently I think we're set for some kind of hearing in June, which will be our first appearance before the ALJ.
That was filed a year ago anyway, wasn't it?
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a big backlog.
I expect to come here and find this case was moot because you had your hearing.
No, I wish. but it isn't. As you know,
doesn't that highlight the point that this case could be moot, that you might have had your hearing and prevailed, and that's why you have administrative exhaustion rules, and that's why the courts don't get involved in cases until the administrative process has run its course.
And that is the general rule.
Exactly what Judge Robinson said, and you said in response, no, Judge, you shouldn't dismiss because there are pendant constitutional claims that still remain. Right? But why aren't those also not final or not even ripe for adjudication until you run through the administrative process? Because you could get your relief administratively.
I think, and if you look at footnote 95 of the court's opinion, the court acknowledges that in this case, a retroactive payment of amounts due will not properly remedy Blue Valley Hospital because, in effect, if we don't get a decision made, if we don't get a pre-hearing determination, the hospital is subject to going out of business and all of those patients will not be treated. That is, and to answer your question very succinctly, Judge, the answer to your question is why is this case different? This case is different because of Matthews versus Eldridge and the collateral claim rule, which was made in that case and which has been actually even acknowledged in this court, in the Tenth Circuit, in the Corporal case in, I believe it was 1986. In fact, I will recommend for your reading a recent case that was decided in 2018 in the Fifth Circuit. That is the Family Rehab versus Azar case, in which in a case where there was no pre-termination hearing, The Fifth Circuit did exactly what I asked the district court to do and what I'm asking you to do.
And is that parallel factually on the exhaustion issue as well?
Yes, I think it is. I think it is. Likewise, so is Matthews versus Eldridge. I'm sorry?
That's the case cited in your brief.
Yes, it is.
What's the name of it?
That case, the Fifth Circuit case, is the family rehab case. Family Rehab versus Azar, 2018 case out of the Fifth Circuit. So pretty recent. And I think what we really need to keep in mind here is that, you know, I'm really just trying to get in the door. We got kicked out on jurisdiction. And the district court kicked us out based on the administrative channeling requirements of Section 405G, which Your Honor just mentioned. And the Matthews versus Eldridge case basically said that if you have a colorable procedural or constitutional claim, which is wholly collateral to the substantive relief sought at the administrative level, in that case, the court has jurisdiction. They can waive the finality requirement and get to the question of whether or not an injunction is appropriate before you get to a final determination on the merits.
The government doesn't really challenge that proposition of law. They just say this is not a colorable claim because there's Tenth Circuit law to the contrary, and it's not really collateral because what you're arguing isn't a general proposition regarding the need for due process, but you're essentially saying the decision in this case was so irregular that you need a real hearing, but that really is the heart of the case. It's not a collateral issue. Am I posing the issues correctly?
I think in a general way you are. Collaterally, is it a collateral claim, and is it a colorable procedural or constitutional
yes.
claim? The court found against me on both of those, and so I have to convince you that that was wrong.
Okay.
And so here goes.
Okay.
The reason that this is a collateral claim is because we're not asking the district court to jump in and decide the issues in the administrative appeal. We only ask for an injunction while those things get decided or while we have a pre-termination hearing, which we are absolutely entitled to and which, frankly, no one claims we have had.
Okay, but your merits, on the merits of your claim for an injunction, is saying you're entitled to another hearing because otherwise you're deprived of due process. And we
yes.
have a case saying that, I'm terrible with names, saying that you're not entitled to a hearing on these matters. The statute wasn't written to protect you. It's to protect the people who need your services. And your response is, but here, it was really unfair. And in essence, to rule in your favor on the due process issue, wouldn't we actually have to address the merits and say, well, wouldn't we have to address
the answer
merits?
Is unequivocally no, you would not. And we are only at the jurisdictional level, and the question is whether or not the district court can exercise jurisdiction. I'm going to make a distinction for you between the cases that find the Matthews versus Eldridge exception applicable and those that don't.
What is your best case for the proposition that you have the standing to assert the interests of your patients? Yeah, I mean, how are we to know? It hasn't been adjudicated whether, in fact, it's your patients whose rights you seek to vindicate rather than your own.
Well, I mean, it is an injunctive relief petition. Part of that is a judgment about what is the effect on the public. So I do think that is part of the analysis. I will also again point out footnote 95, in which even the district court said that I had met that particular level. But if I might get to the distinction between what is completely collateral and what is not, you will find that in every case, including the Matthews case, including the Corporal case, which was a Tenth Circuit case back in 1986, and including the family rehab case, which I cited to you, the Fifth Circuit case, each one of those cases is the lack of a pre-termination hearing. That's what they have in common. Where the district court went wrong is applying this inextricably intertwined language that comes from the Heckler versus Ringer case. I'll tell you why that's wrong. The Heckler versus Ringer case is not a pre-termination hearing case. It is a case where Medicare recipients were trying to establish through the administrative process their right to have certain surgeries done. They were trying to establish that right. It was not a case where the property interest or the liberty interest existed, and it was a question of how you terminate it. They were trying to establish that right. In that context, the United States Supreme Court said, hey, really, this is not a constitutional case. You're just trying to establish the right to these surgeries. And in that case, the cases are inextricably intertwined.
Okay, but you're familiar with our geriatrics case, which denied, said you don't have a right to a hearing. In the
yes, case. Yes.
And to distinguish that, you had to make an argument that seems to me is pretty close to the merits. So maybe I misunderstood your argument. How do you distinguish geriatrics? Why does that show that you don't have a colorable
If I
argument?
Remember the geriatrics case, it's the one I'm thinking of. I believe the court in that case.
It's a nursing home case.
Yeah. Found jurisdiction, then did the flexible due process analysis and found that there was no claim.
Right.
Right.
So, and the reason.
I haven't had the benefit of that.
No. But what it shows is. What it said is, you have no right to a hearing.
Okay.
And so that shows that your claim here isn't colorable.
Right.
And you tried to distinguish it, and you distinguished it in a way that I think probably ends up being going to the merits. So explain how you distinguish geriatrics to show that you have a colorable
claim. Here's how. The difference between actually finding a due process violation and finding whether there is an allegation, a colorable allegation of a violation of due process are two different things. One is based on the pleadings, one is based on facts. All right? In that case, you found jurisdiction, then you applied the flexible test with respect to the level of due process due and found that it did not entitle the claimant in that case to a hearing.
It was at a very general level. It said a Medicare and Medicaid provider doesn't have a due process right to a hearing, dismissing it as a provider. And that's a very general statement.
It might very well be.
And if that's correct, if that applies here, you don't have a colorable claim. And as I understood
that case, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No. I'll let you talk.
That case stands for the proposition that, in my case, yes, there is jurisdiction, and I am entitled to a review to determine whether or not and at what level of due process my client is entitled prior to the termination. That's what that case stands for. And in fact, I think they are all pretty consistently in that same vein. What happened at the district court here was the trial court said, I'm going to go ahead and dive into the facts, and I'm going to use that as my colorableness argument, when instead she should have found jurisdiction and then let me have a hearing and fully flesh out the level of due process, which I think, considering the promulgation of a retroactive immediate rule in this particular case, would have unquestionably, I hope, allowed me to get a pre-termination hearing. At least that's the argument, and that's how I would distinguish it. I see I only have about a minute left, and if you don't mind, I think I'll try to reserve that.
All right.
May it please the court,
My name is Robin Anderson, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. And I just wanted to address some of the things that the court was just discussing with Mr. Tiedemann. The entitlement to jurisdiction in this case under Matthews requires both a collateral claim and a colorable claim. That's well-established law going back 40 years. The problem with Blue Valley's case is they have neither. So the distinction they're trying to make on saying that colorable doesn't require showing success on the merits doesn't really get them anywhere if they can't also show a collateral claim. Blue Valley's problem in this case is that their case is in no way collateral. Their TRO motion before the district court premised their likelihood of success on the likelihood of them winning their administrative case. The arguments they lay out as...
Wait a minute. Repeat that, please.
Speak a little slower.
Sorry.
Slow down a touch.
I will do my best.
I'm sure you've never been told that before.
Only 700 or 800 times. Blue Valley's TRO motion before the district court, when it went through the four factors, argued that its likelihood of success was not on prevailing on any sort of due process claim to a pre-termination hearing, but a likelihood of them winning their administrative case. So if that's the case, then there's no way for the court to issue any relief in this case, injunctive or otherwise, because they would necessarily have to dive into the issues before the administrative court. And I think you can compare Blue Valley's amended complaint in this case, the due process violations they allege in paragraph 86. You can look at their administrative appeal, which is part of the record, and see jot for jot the arguments are the same. So there's essentially no valid argument here that Blue Valley's claim in this case is any way collateral to their administrative case. They're, as Judge Robinson found, nearly identical.
And that's all part of the appellate record?
That is, and I can provide you page numbers if you'd like. Just a few things about the family rehab case. I would argue that the more directly comparable case is out of the Sixth Circuit, and that's Cathedral Rock. It's cited in the government's brief. In that case, much like in this case, the provider was terminated and filed a lawsuit either the same day or the day before the termination went into effect. That's the same as in this case. In family rehab, the provider had, I think, accomplished two out of the four administrative steps, but the third step had a three-year backlog. Blue Valley's ALJ hearing in this case is set for June 19th. So I think Cathedral Rock is much more distinguishable, and Cathedral Rock found, as Judge Robinson did, that there's no jurisdiction in this type of case.
You seem to be conceding that it's a colorable claim.
I am not conceding that it's a colorable
claim. Are you arguing the point?
I would definitely not. Under geriatrics, I think it's clearly not a colorable claim. In fact, I have not found yet an appellate court that's found this claim to a pre-termination hearing by a Medicare provider to be a colorable claim. In fact, the only pre-termination hearing that I know of is in the Goldberg case, which was the kind of precursor to the Matthews case, which was in the case of a welfare recipient. But I am...
How do you read the Fifth Circuit case that he cited, family rehab? I lost my internet connection, so I wasn't able to look it up just now.
I'm sorry, how do I...
Yeah, how do you distinguish it? He seems to rely on that as entitling him to a hearing.
Let me just... Well, I think in that case, like I was saying, the backlog was 3 years.
But did they give a provider the right to go into federal court?
In that case, it was an assessment of overpayments, and they had reached the administrative part in the administrative process where they would have had to have repaid those overpayments. And so because of the backlog, and there was also some slightly different jurisdictional arguments, not solely under Matthews, I think there was an ultra vires claim in that case as well, which would distinguish it from.
But I thought you said there were no cases allowing a provider hearing, and you seem to be conceding that that case did allow a court to require a hearing to a provider before the administrative process had terminated.
I think, I'm not sure that they issued the pre-termination hearing, but they might have accepted jurisdiction and then rejected the substantive claim to a pre-termination hearing. That's exactly what they did in Matthews as well. So there's cases where you can find that they apply Matthews and the colorable, they do the analysis under Matthews for a colorable claim and a collateral claim, and they might assert jurisdiction, but then they deny the relief sought because there's no likelihood
of So they found it was collateral. They thought it was colorable enough to give them jurisdiction, but then they said you don't have a right to a hearing. Is that
right? And there's many cases that do that. The one that comes to mind that has the most sort of fulsome analysis is the Goss case. It's a district court case, but it has a very well-established or well-set-out analysis. And in that case, they actually go through all the appellate cases that have denied a pre-termination hearing in the context of a Medicare provider. So I would argue that there's neither a colorable or a collateral claim here. And the problem for Blue Valley is that you do have to look at the merits of the underlying claim, at the kind of underlying nature, the factual background of what's going on, because that's an integral part of the jurisdictional analysis. It's not enough to just come and say, hey, I'm asserting this claim, please let me in the door, and then we'll deal with the fallout of that later. Matthews is a pretty strict test because it is the only way to get around what's a very well-established and long-held statutory exhaustion process under Section 405. And I would think that Blue Valley's arguments in this case, in arguing that their due process claim is based on essentially the wrongfulness of their case, of their particular circumstances, is what makes their claim in no way collateral. It's in every way tied to the outcome of the termination decision, not the process. And that's very different than in Matthews, where the plaintiff there was challenging the process generally, not necessarily as it applied to him.
So I'm looking at the family rehab case here, and I'm just going to read you a piece of it. Sounds a lot like what your opposing counsel's arguing here. And this begins with the government's rebuttals are unavailing. First, it contends that by attempting to prevent the recoupment of its Medicare payments, Family Rehab effectively seeks substantive relief. Not so. Family Rehab seeks only the temporary suspension of recoupment until a hearing, which is quite different from a permanent reinstatement of the benefits. And I mean, that seems to me that the Fifth Circuit was saying, look, we're going to preserve the status quo here. And that seems what they're asking for. They're not asking for us to determine that they're right. They're just asking for the opportunity to, you know, present their case before they're put out of business, right?
Right.
And so how do you get around that?
Well, I think that you have to take a close look at their complaint, or not even a close look. If you look at their prayer for relief and also their reply brief, Blue Valley isn't asking for a pre-termination hearing. They're not asking for this injunction just to take them through the ALJ's hearing scheduled in June. They want it to last through the Department Appellate Board, the appeal of that ALJ decision, and to any subsequent judicial review. Complaint also requests that the court, if and when it becomes necessary, to issue a permanent injunction against them being terminated. So Blue Valley is not asking for a pre-termination hearing. They're asking for enough hearings that...
Well, what if we construe it as just asking for a pre-termination hearing?
I think that would be guided by geriatrics. It's clearly not a right providers have.
Isn't it, I mean, assume they asked for all that stuff. I mean, isn't it possible that their position is correct as to some of it and incorrect as to other parts? Maybe they don't have a right to an injunction on some of that, but maybe they do have the right to an injunction on the pre-termination hearing idea.
Well, I'm not sure how they can show a likelihood of success on winning on the pre-termination hearing claim when maybe not all courts, but nearly all courts have rejected that as a colorable claim. That would somehow single Blue Valley out as the provider that gets a hearing before the termination decision can go into effect. And it's not a situation where Blue Valley hasn't already had some process. There was a written back and forth before the termination decision ever went into effect. So I think the notion that you could just get an injunction on this one issue kind of overlooks the true nature of Blue Valley's case, but also sets a pretty dangerous precedent for Medicare in trying to make effective administrative decisions.
Well, let's talk about jurisdiction. So the district court here kicks it out on jurisdiction. The family rehab case says, no, there is jurisdiction to hear that. I mean, presumably, they could still go back to Judge Robinson and lose.
Correct. And Judge Robinson's order actually noted that even if she had taken jurisdiction, she would have denied the injunction because there's no colorable claim.
That might be, I mean, that's advisory. I don't have jurisdiction, but if I did, I would deny it. Seems like, I mean, maybe they lose again. Maybe that's already the writing's on the wall, but don't you think that the jurisdictional determination, I mean, at least as far as when you're comparing it to this family rehab case, it may be wrong?
Well, I would dispute that it's wrong. And again, I would draw your attention to the Cathedral Rock case, which I think was cited by Judge Robinson as the more analogous case. And I dispute the idea that it's the correct outcome that Blue Valley has asserted both a collateral and a colorable claim here. Saying that you want a pre-termination hearing in the general sense might have worked under Matthews' analysis, might have worked in the Matthews case because there was sort of a vindication of this right in general. And when the court in Matthews looked at the right to a pre-termination hearing for Social Security disability benefits, it had nothing to do with Mr. Eldridge's case. The second part of that opinion, I'm not even sure, mentions Mr. Eldridge. It was to disability benefit recipients generally. That's very different than Blue Valley's case, which has said they and only they deserve this pre-termination hearing because the decision was so wrong. There's no way for any court to evaluate that claim without looking at whether that decision was right or wrong, which would require the court to immerse itself in a matter that's still pending before the agency. So I think without a colorable or a collateral claim and without a colorable claim as well, I don't think they can win on jurisdiction. There are no further questions?
No further questions, but you might talk to your boss after Mr. McAllister and ask him to tell you a story about when one of his students was speaking to, you know the story?
I don't, but I'm sure.
Speaking too fast before the Supreme Court. It's a great story.
Well, I'm always open to hearing any tips on solving this problem.
Well, I've got a tip then, if you really are sincere.
Certainly.
I think I'd find an undergraduate school somewhere and take a course in rhetoric.
Okay.
Just to slow it down and articulate your points, your words, so that they're clear. Because from where I sit, I just hear a blur.
Okay.
Especially the faster you go, the crisper the blur becomes.
I just have a lot to say about this. So.
Yeah, I just think it'll be a lifetime in my career.
Shall I tell that story?
Please, go ahead.
I'll tell this to everyone in my commute. So Steve McAllister used to is the U.S. attorney. He's a clerk for Rehnquist, one of the Supreme Court justices, mm-hmm. and he taught appellate advocacy at University of Kansas Law School, and he had a case before the Supreme Court in which the opposing attorney was a former student. And she gets about a minute or two into the argument, and he scribbles a note and puts it on her podium. I mean, you don't do this in Supreme Court arguments, you know, write notes to opposing counsel. And the note said, slow down. He was still teaching her.
Well, it's well taken, and I appreciate the input.
It's essential, I think.
Okay.
I always say to lawyers, when I can't hear them, if I can't hear you, I can't help you.
Yeah.
So it's just a good rule, not just for one lawyer, but just as a general advocacy tip for all lawyers.
Certainly.
Don't think we're picking on you. Yeah. Thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you for your time. We just ask that you affirm the district court's decision, and if there's any questions, I refer you to my...
Thank you for your time, and we merely ask you to affirm the district court's decision.
And if there's any questions, thank you. My brief is more slowly written. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the good briefing.
Mr. Tiedemann, you've got about 10 minutes of material you want to get in 1 minute, so... We've given you terrible advice just now. Yeah.
Okay, first of all, Mr. Rickey reminded me that the geriatrics case is not a subject matter jurisdiction case, which I thought was correct, and it was not even that was not even the issue on appeal. Right. So that the review that was done at that stage was an overall application of due process principles, not a colorableness analysis. No.
But if it was a holding, and that holding shows that you're claim is not colorable, then it's relevant for that purpose.
Let me point out something else. I think we have all acknowledged, including opposing counsel here, that there are many, many cases which find jurisdiction and then go on to find, but no, there is no additional due process necessary. I believe, first of all, that I've established a colorable claim and that if I get to take that next step, because of this rulemaking issue, which, by the way, was just heard last week in the Supreme Court in the Alina case, which I submitted as supplemental authority, it was just heard last week. Not only is my claim colorable, I think Judge Robinson was dead wrong when she said that there is no right to a notice and comment period for this kind of rule. Not just colorable, wrong. I think that's very important in this case, and I think just the fact that certiorari was granted in that case in an opinion that was written by Brett Kavanaugh before he went on the court in the D.C. Circuit just got cert granted, and the argument was last week. This is more than a colorable case. This is a good due process case. And so if we look at it, to me, it's the difference between granting a summary judgment and deciding a case after you've listened to all of the facts. Colorableness is just, do I get in the door? I'm not claiming I've proven my case yet, but I think we've gotten in the door, and certainly with that Alina case.
As part of getting in the door, so you're in the door, as part of proving your case, do you have to establish likelihood of success on the merits of the administrative case?
Oh, not of the administrative case? I don't think so. I think it would just be that I would be the likelihood of success on the merits of getting a permanent injunction.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything further from my colleagues? Hearing nothing, this case is submitted. Counsel are excused, and please forgive us for injecting ourselves into personal advice. But it's always good for young lawyers to hear, I think. Court is in recess until tomorrow morning, and the clerk will announce the recess.